This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, good morning to you. It's a Wednesday here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. We're happy you are with us. I wasn't quite sure I was going to make it on the air in time there just a second ago, Carl.
Why?
I don't know how this happens, but have you ever, like, taken your wired headphones or something that's got a wire on it and grabbed it at the last minute, and then you realize that at some point the wire had relations with itself and it's all intertwined?
Yes.
And you can't get it unhooked. Well, those were my headphones a minute ago.
That's why the kids go wireless now.
Yes, I know that, and I've got a pair of AirPods, so I'm up to date. But there are no wireless AirPods in the studio. So that's kind of the older technology we are tied to here. Good morning, Kim St. Ange. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thank you. Boy, lots to get to you last night. You know, right at the end of our interview yesterday with Mark Harder, if you missed that, Mark told us that he was fully expecting Sam Page to try to pass some resolution last night honoring Planned Parenthood for, I guess, their 40-year reign of murdering children in the greater St. Louis region. He was going to honor them for that. And that Republicans, that council members were going to try to block that last night. And lo and behold, they did. Dennis Hancock blocked it. And the three Republicans on the council, Mike Archer, Dennis Hancock, and, of course, Mark Harder, voted against allowing a pause in the middle of the council meeting so that the crazy liberals like Clancy and Sam Page could stand up and honor Planned Parenthood at the county government meeting.
That's awful.
Isn't it?
I was listening to a podcast with Nicole Shanahan, who was, of course, RFK Jr.'s running mate. And I didn't know this, and I don't think a lot of people did, but she was actually pregnant, unexpectedly pregnant on the campaign trail and had a very terrible miscarriage.
Oh, wow.
At like 20 weeks, and said it was a near-death experience. She lost an incredible amount of blood. And, you know, she used to be very, very left, and now she's a lot more conservative. She found Jesus. And she was talking about how what's really sad is a lot of the people who are on the left, like a Sam Page, they celebrate the killing of babies. You know, like it's one thing, even though I am of the opinion of no exceptions, but I understand that's more of the quote unquote extreme viewpoint. But a lot of people on the left, it's not just like, oh, I think when it's necessary, we should allow it. A lot of them are saying, way to go. You should, whatever you want to do, whatever feels right to you, my body, my choice. And it's really sad. Like the fact that he wants to issue this proclamation to celebrate them.
Well,
no.
I mean, yeah, I think, it's an indication of where St. Louis County is going as a government.
And but, society as a whole.
Yeah, well, society as a whole, maybe. It's unfortunate. But you look at J.B. Pritzker, who made comments yesterday about, you know, indoctrinating your children into LGBTQ culture. You look at the outrage that a major corporation decided not to fund Pride Fest this year. I watched a Channel 2 story about that this morning. They're down $150,000. What will they do? I mean, I don't know. I saw where Steve's Hot Dogs is donating like half their profits for the week to try to help help the Pride Parade. I'm sure it's going to recover. I mean, I guess there's always the argument against putting all of your eggs in one basket if that was your primary sponsor for all those years. Maybe you should have had a couple more. I don't know. I mean, money comes and goes in situations like that. I just thought the Page thing was unfortunate. But we did get a preview of it yesterday, and exactly what Mark thought was going to happened last night at the county council meeting. So that's just one of the many things that are going on, in addition to lots of talk about Signal. And Kim St. Ange, I just have to point out that on this program yesterday, we called this for exactly what it was. And you've got to weed through the noise, right? I've been around for too many years to ever believe in coincidence when it comes to politics. That doesn't exist, ladies and gentlemen. There is no such thing as coincidence in politics. The fact that there happened to be a Senate hearing scheduled yesterday with the director of national intelligence and the CIA director and Mike Waltz and all those people already happened to be scheduled before the Senate. And the night before, something gets leaked to the most liberal, one of the most liberal crazed reporters in Washington, D.C. or New York, wherever he resides, was not coincidence. It was planned. The question now is just, where did it come from? And what we said yesterday was it didn't make any sense for Hegseth to act like it didn't happen. It obviously happened. The question was who caused it to happen, because none of the people on that text string would have ever interacted with this reporter.
Well, this actually happened earlier this month, and then the attack happened, and then it came out.
Yes.
The day before.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
so he may have chosen that.
They chose it the night before this happened. And there are no coincidences in Washington. You know, Mark Warner and all these Democrats were so outraged, and they're calling for people to be fired. And how can you defend this? And it was a nothing. It is a nothing burger. It's just what it is. First of all, if and this is a huge if, like, you know, if my aunt had wheels, she'd be a wagon kind of if. But if the guy accidentally got his phone number put on there, then you admit to that and you say, okay, this is what happened. It was an accident. It didn't derail anything. It didn't cost any lives. It didn't break until after the actual attack had happened. It's just noise in Washington, D.C., and an opportunity for Democrats to use an already scheduled testimony in Congress to try to tear down the Trump administration or slow them down. They literally have nothing else other than Jasmine Crockett making fun of a man in a wheelchair. That's their only other thing they have making news today. And that kind of sums up the headlines. You had that hearing yesterday, and you had Jasmine Crockett in front of the Human Rights Campaign. The Human Rights Campaign, let me repeat that, making fun of a man in a wheelchair, the governor of Texas. Governor Hot Wheels, she called him. And the people at the Human Rights Council, which once again just shows you their true colors, applauded her when she said that. They all laughed and applauded her. It was disgusting to watch.
It's the party of love.
It's the party of tolerance and love for you right there. So we're going to get we got lots of good stuff. We're going to get to Nick Lee Ambrose next hour. We'll talk more about this attempt to impeach a couple of these liberal left-wing judges who seem to exist only to try to block anything related to Donald Trump. We'll talk more about The Trump administration invoking state secrets privilege in this case over deportations. Attorney Jeremy Rosenthal is going to join us in the 7 o'clock hour. Todd Pyro on today. We're hoping to get to C.B. Cotton from Fox in the 8 o'clock hour as well. But right now, Carl, let's get to our top stories.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
There's a difference between inadvertent release versus
careless and sloppy,
malicious leaks of classified information.
Yeah, I thought Tulsi Gabbard did a very good job yesterday in the face of being screamed at by people like Senator Mark Warner there.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but of all the people out there, somehow this guy gets on somebody's contact and then gets sucked into this group.
Yeah. That's Mike Waltz, who was on Fox last night talking about this leak. I thought Laura Ingraham asked him some hard questions, and I thought he handled it very well.
Go and check it. You probably won't bother because you're not going to like what you see. This was total weaponization. It's a disgrace. Should never happen in this country. But now you'll be able to see for yourselves, all declassified.
Maybe they need to haul some former FBI assistant directors in front of Congress again and ask a few questions. They're going to completely declassify Operation Crossfire Hurricane and know the Rolling Stones are not involved.
Because we in these hot-ass Texas streets, honey. Y'all know we got Governor Hot Wheels down there. Come on now.
There you have it. The class, the current class of the Democrat Party, Jasmine Crockett getting laughter and applause from the Human Rights Campaign at a speech she gave in New York. It's that sad. Could you imagine a Republican making fun of somebody with a handicap? Oh, wait a minute. I do remember that. They accused Donald Trump of that one time, making fun of a reporter who had some stilted speech and mannerisms from some affliction that he has. I don't remember what it was exactly. And they tried to run him out of the presidential race for it. Remember that? But they applauded Jasmine Crockett yesterday for making fun of a governor who had his back broken by a tree in his 20s and became paralyzed and confined to a wheelchair. That's the exception, I guess, depending on which party you're in, if you're on the left. All right, Carl Middleman.
Yes.
Who's going to sing our national anthem
today? Today is the 77th birthday of one Mr. Steven Tyler.
Oh, nice.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but of all the people out there, somehow this guy who has lied about the president, who has lied to Gold Star families, lied to their attorneys, and gone to Russia hoax, gone to just all kinds of lengths to lie and smear the president of the United States. And he's the one that somehow gets on somebody's contact and then gets sucked into this group.
Mike Waltz there last night on with Laura Ingraham. Kind of hits the nail on the head. What are the odds of that happening, right? I mean, it would almost have been like Jake Tapper or Margaret Brennan accidentally getting this text message, except they got this Rosenberg guy instead, who is a Trump hater from way back, and did the Democrats' bidding by waiting until the day before they had these top three officials sitting in front of Congress to release his, you know, groundbreaking information. And now you've got the esteemed Hakeem Jeffries, who's in way over his head as minority leader in the House, demanding Pete Hegseth resign. First of all, they've got Elon Musk on the job. Get this. This one is good. Go ahead and play cut eight, Carl, please.
So they want to focus on this. It's embarrassing, right? Yes. We're going to get to the bottom of it. I just talked to Elon on the way here. We've got the best technical minds looking at how this happened. But I can tell you for 100%, I don't know this guy. I know him by his horrible reputation, and he really is the bottom scum of journalists. And I know him in the sense that he hates the president, but I don't text him. He wasn't on my phone, and we're going to figure out how this happened.
So you don't.
Yeah. They've got Elon Musk on the job, which I would assume, you know, I've never used Signal. I will point out again, it was approved during the Biden administration as being allowed to be used for federal government business communication. So pre-approved before Trump ever took office by the Department of Defense. They installed it on their computers the minute they took over. Because it was already being used in by the SecDef and others. They'll find out exactly how this number got added to the chat. And if it's one of Trump's people, let the chips fall where they may fall. My guess is whoever at the NSA was monitoring all of this wanted to make sure it got leaked. And my guess is when we discover who that is, heads will roll. We'll see. All right, coming up, we're going to get to Kim on a Whim. Stay tuned.
Kim on a Whim.
Can you hear that?
I can. That
Do you
sounds,
know what that is?
Sounds like a heartbeat.
It is. It's my baby's heartbeat.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I had my appointment yesterday. And I've been feeling little kicks now for a couple of weeks, which they say you start to feel them earlier with your second.
Yes.
I think with my son, Easton, I started feeling him around maybe 18, 19 weeks. And with this baby, I've started feeling him closer to 15 weeks. I'm about to be, 18 weeks. I asked my husband the other day, I'm like, am I 16 weeks? Am I 17 weeks? I've heard that's what happens as you have more children. You're like, how many months am I now? You're not keeping track as closely.
No.
But as we're preparing to welcome this new life into our home, you know, you have the thought of, oh my gosh, I love my child. I love Easton so much. How can I possibly love another baby as much?
Yep.
And it's a fear that I think a lot of people have, friends I've talked to as they've been growing their families like we are. And I certainly have felt that. And I know what many of you who have multiple children are probably thinking is somehow your heart just grows. It just happens. And it's incredible. And when you hold that baby for the very first time, you can't imagine your life without that child now as part of your family. But it's kind of nerve-wracking of like, am I really going to love this baby as much as I love Easton?
I think that I think having experienced that a couple times, your concern in large part is how is the first one going to take this?
Yeah.
And are they going to feel like they're less loved because of the new one? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a legitimate concern.
Jealousy, I know, is a definite thing.
You worry about the jealousy mm-hmm. thing. My daughter was worried about that as well. And, you know, from a grandparent's perspective, you tend to see it a little differently, maybe because you've been through it. But he loves that little girl. I mean, our grandson loves his little sister and pats her on the head. And they do kid things like fight over toys on occasion. And you're going to have a little bit of that. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I think that's probably there's just nothing like holding them right mm-hmm. after they're born. Right.
Right.
It's just you bond right then.
Mm-hmm. No, I can't wait for that moment. And to see how Easton reacts. And I know you have across the spectrum reactions, you know, where you picture in your mind this really cute moment where the older brother or sister are so excited to meet their baby sibling. And then you have the kids where they push them away or they want nothing to do with them. So we're obviously just kind of going to go with the flow and know that Easton, this is going to be a big adjustment for him as well come late August when I'm due. But you have to ask yourself the question, especially if you have kids like you, Mark, who are grown. Do parents have favorites? Because I know as kids, we've joked with our parents of, Mom and Dad, do you have a favorite kid?
I don't know if that's, I mean, you're kind of putting me on the spot here.
Well,
I don't know if that's, probably, maybe at some point, because as they get older, I don't think you maybe do when they're younger, as they get older, you're going to have a different relationship as an adult with all of them.
Right.
And maybe some of them you'll have more things in common with than others. I don't know if it's a favorite thing. When they're little, if there's no doubt about it, if you have one that is completely well behaved most of the time and another one that's a little hellion, you're gonna favor the one that doesn't give you as much grief. That doesn't mean you love the other one any less, right?
No, I'm glad you're being honest about it because I think that people always want to sit there and, well, no, absolutely not. It's the same with every child, and of course you love your children.
You do.
All the same, but you're right. I mean, certainly there have to be some differences. There was a study that actually looked into this, and they wanted to figure out, do parents have favorites? And it turns out, yes. In fact, it was almost, you know, line by line what you were saying. And now you have to ask yourself, okay, if you have a boy versus a girl, does that make a difference? Listen to this.
Girls tend to receive the sweet treatment, with a study finding daughters may be easier to parent. For that same reason, children who are seen as more agreeable and conscientious were also more likely to receive favored status.
But what we also see later on with those kids is sometimes they grew up internalizing the message that love is conditional. So there are other drawbacks to that type of relationship.
There you go, right? That's kind of similar to what you said, that the conditional part, I mean, obviously you have to work as a parent to not make the kids feel like the love toward them is conditional.
No, and
I only will love you if you clean your room and eat your vegetables. Otherwise, no.
Well, I mean, just reflect back on when you were a teenager. Specifically, you have two sisters.
Mm-hmm.
So as teenage girls, there are different challenges with teenage girls than there are with teenage boys.
Yeah.
Right? And that relationship sometimes is different between the teenage girl and her mother and the teenage girl and her father, or with boys, the same thing. It's just the dynamics are all different. And to saying that you had a favorite, I mean, I would assume you could have different emotional reactions to your children at different stages of their development based on how they're interacting with you, right? I mean, I don't know. So in other words, maybe that could change at different points of their lives. When you're really getting along with them well, you might feel like that briefly, and then you might have times of conflict.
I agree.
I don't think I could ever have assigned a favorite tag to any of them.
Well, I think that that word is used a lot, and you watch TV shows and they joke about, you know, oh, I'm the favorite child or something like that. Over the years, they've done that whole little skit.
Oh yeah.
That word is probably not the best. Like you said, I'm sure your relationship changes as mine has changed over the years with my parents. Like, I was the kid who was easier to get up in the morning for school, and I was the one who was better at cleaning. And I'm sorry if my sisters are listening. That does not mean my parents love me more, but in that phase of life, it was probably easier to get me to do certain things.
Sure.
But then I also am very opinionated, and I might be more inclined to push back on things. So that would be challenging, you know? And so it's like this give and take thing. So just because I was maybe more agreeable or easier in one way of, okay, Kim, we don't have to drag Kim out of the bed to get her to go to school on time. Well, I'm going to push back and I'm going to voice my opinions and things like that. And that can create conflict.
Every parent must struggle with that because
I'm sure.
just about the time you're ready to strangle them, they come over and curl up on your lap, and you're the sweetest thing that ever lived.
I always joke it's like the Sour Patch Kids. It's like first they're sour and then they're sweet. Like Easton throws a tantrum and then on his own comes up to me and lays his little head on my shoulder. He's
exactly.
Like, hi, Mama. I'm like,
see?
Okay, that's just adorable. No, it's so true. And the comment I mentioned too is bosses have to feel like this. Like, bosses know the employees who are more agreeable, who are not dealing with the same person who's constantly, you know, complaining or constantly causing HR issues and things like that. A thorn in their side. You don't want to be the thorn in someone's side.
Yeah. Or you could be accused of being a brown noser, one of the two.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We all know there are brown nosers.
I'm just saying. The person who replies all to every company-wide email.
You know, now that you've brought this up, Mark,
you
know that I do not support, 99% of the time, I do not support reply all to a company email. Like, okay. You just don't need to do it, okay? But what I do support that for, and I almost did it the other day, but I resisted, was asking people to put food away in the refrigerator. If there's leftover food, I think that would warrant a reply all. Someone please make sure it gets refrigerated so that we can then enjoy it in the morning.
At this moment of your life, food is your love language.
It really is. I already talked about it a lot, but now I think about it a lot.
I know. It's true. And we did have some great leftover Mexican food from, was it Rosalie's? Is that what they got?
Rosalita's. And there's more in the fridge. I already checked when I got in this morning.
Oh, there's some left?
Mm-hmm.
2 days old.
That's fine.
Okay. Just
had five tacos yesterday before 9 a.m.
Soft tacos.
Soft tacos. That's right.
In case you're wondering. Yeah, that's great. All right. Good stuff, Kim. So, coming up here, I want to talk about this a little bit, and I'm anxious to get your opinion on it because it might be different than mine. I've talked about the NIL thing in sports before, the name, image, likeness, where these college athletes can now make bank, depending on how good they are, at college. And I've disagreed with it since it was started. And now some previous athletes who played sports before that started are now going back and suing their universities, including the University of Missouri. So we're going to talk about that when we come back in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned.
If you're feeding a person a crap sandwich with a smile, it's still a crap sandwich.
I think NIL is a crap sandwich. Do you agree with me or not?
I would say overall, yes, I do not agree with NIL.
I do not know how this ever became a thing. Am I jealous? No. A long time ago, there was a real discussion in college athletics that you had kids that were being recruited from very poor backgrounds, and they were coming to college, and all their friends had money to go out on the weekends and go get lunch and all this, and they didn't, and that wasn't fair. So because the university was making money off the sports they participated in, namely men's basketball and football, because none of the other sports make any money, that money should be shared in the form of a paycheck of some sort to all athletes. If you're a scholarship athlete, you get $200 a week from the university. Or maybe $500 a month or something. You get some sort of a paycheck deposited into your account in return for your participation in sports at the university. And while I didn't love the idea, I thought, I mean, most of these kids, if you're on scholarship, you're getting the equivalent of a $100,000 gift if you get a 4-year college degree out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting paid. But I could have accepted that. And instead, what did they do? They turned college sports into a minor league for professional athletics by saying, come to our school and our wealthy donors will sign you to contracts where you could make $1 million a year if we can put your name on the side of a product, a bag of potato chips, or on a car dealership will do ads with you or something like that. Well, what did that do? How many kids in any sport at a school are going to have the draw to get that perk? Well, only the best athletes. So on a football team, maybe the top 2 or 3 stars are going to get NIL deals. The rest of them don't get crap. Same with basketball. Maybe the starting five might be good enough to get an NIL deal. The rest of them aren't going to get crap. So you're not fixing the problem. You're just turning college sports into a minor league where somebody can, because right now they can't go directly from the high school to the NBA anymore. They certainly can't go directly from high school to pro football. They're just not physically mature enough in most cases. So what they've done is, and I don't know who did it, they've substituted college for some sort of minor league growth for professional, potential professional athletes. I've hated it from day one, but I knew what was going to happen the minute they did it. And it started with the guy who was a running back. Was it Bush, his last name? He was a running back for like UCLA or USC years ago. I think he won the Heisman. And he turned around and sued because they didn't give him any money when he was in college 20 years ago. And now all the other athletes who performed but never really were able to make any money professionally decided they should have gotten some money too. Here's the headline this morning. Former Mizzou stars Drew Locke and Sophie Cunningham have joined an antitrust lawsuit about the NCAA to try to get paid. So they're part of the newest wave of current and former college athletes suing the NCAA for monetary damages as part of a plaintiffs in a suit called Fontenot versus NCAA. Among the latest wave, former Tigers cornerback Caleb Evans, former basketball center Josh Gray, three former St. Louis University basketball players, Hassan French, Jimmy Bell, and Lamont Evans. And their allegations are all the same, that they've been harmed by their previous inability to receive compensation for their name, image, and likeness.
Are they, I mean, obviously I know Drew Locke, but are any of them who are also listed good enough athletes where they would have received those deals,
how
you think?
How do you prove it?
Well, yeah, how do you quantify that? Because you're right, it's not like everyone's going to get a deal. I can understand the frustration. I would be irritated if I graduated, and the year after I graduated, let's just say I was super successful and would have been included in the NIL deals, I would be irritated if I missed out on that opportunity and they're raking in millions. Because if they don't make it to the NFL or they don't make it, you know, NBA, let's say they get injured at the end of their college career, they've still made millions of dollars just from that time frame. That's frustrating. Now, I don't know if these lawsuits, though, are going to hold any water.
It's bull crap. That's exactly what it is. It is
chicken crap.
And here's why. Because all of the great athletes, like look at Stan Musial, for example, one of the greatest hitters in baseball history, broke a record, I believe, when he signed a $100,000 deal years ago. Like in the 60s or so. I forget when it was. Today, that man would be a multi-millionaire in the major leagues. But it's a different system now. He couldn't sue Major League Baseball for not paying him as much during his time. The rules change. And I'm sorry you didn't play sports 10 years later than you did, Drew Locke. But I don't think you deserve a dime. Mm-hmm. I don't. Those weren't the rules, and it's the NCAA's stupid fault for changing the rules in the first place.
Let's see what happens with these lawsuits. I think the whole thing is pretty silly, but
if it goes to a jury, they're going to get in there and tug on people's heartstrings and say, oh, this poor person was robbed because today he could have made $1 million.
Now they have to eat ramen. They can't afford nice meals because they missed out on NIL money.
Cry me a river. Coming up, we're going to talk to Nicolee Ambrose about what's going on with these judges challenging Trump.
Get more at 971talk.com.